anybody here not know what homeopathy is? Do I need this slide?
I thought this slide was the dilution.
Okay, very, very good. It's 30 C, lots of 30 C's around. That's 10 to the 6D dilution. And if you start with a plausible number, that's one molecule in a sphere of this size. So, it's quite clearly utterly delusional, and it's a miracle that it should have survived. Well, any time after 1865. There's an interesting bit, actually, in the fifth edition of Harnum's Organon, which shows quite clearly that he believes in the indivisibility of matter, because Avogadro and somebody else who just escapes me, Davy, had written about that in Harnum's time. He obviously said, well, we can't do it so far that there's nothing left. The trouble is, they didn't actually find the value for Avogadrism until after Harnum was dead. If he had known about it, the numerical value for Avogadro's number, he would probably never have used the dilutions he did, since he was actually perfectly sensible about it. Now, this is not going to be a homily against homeopaths. It seems to be intermittent. Not going to be a homily against homeopaths as such. I've met a few homeopaths, and they've really been rather nice people. Almost all female, of course, which is a curious phenomenon in itself, and really very nice, well-meaning, sweet, utterly deluded, but well-meaning people. Some of them kill people, of course, when they go to Africa and try to treat air and malaria and AIDS. But I think they kill people sincerely, of course. There has to be some sort of credit for that, I suppose. To my mind, they are not primarily the real villains in this piece. The real villains are actually quite other people. Take the University of Westminster, for example. Well, here's two exam questions, both of which look a little archaic in their wording. The first one is archaic. It was in the University College London Materia Medica and Therapeutics exam in 1863. And the second one looks, in a sense, even older, but in fact it's not. It was in the University of Westminster 2005 exam in Homeopathic Materia Medica 2A. It refers to miasms. You notice miasms is a word that comes from the early 19th century when cholera was endemic in London and nobody knew how it was spread, so they thought it was the evil smelling vapours and they called them miasms. Of course, subsequently, John Snow discovered the spread of water through the famous Broad Street pump paper. Robert Koch discovered the microorganism that causes cholera. But the homeopaths went straight on, ignoring the whole lot of it and pretending it was a miasm. And the word persists right to this day. And what's really evil is that it persists in universities, which are meant to be the guardians against such sort of nonsense. It exists in a list of universities and the courses they run. The University of Westminster has the record, but there's plenty of others.
Excuse me, can you adjust your microphone, because you're really not comprehensive on the back. Can you put it a little bit lower down?
Yes, how's that?
Much better.
Much better. Okay. Here's a list of some of the universities. The details don't matter, there's an awful lot of them, and they teach an awful lot of nonsense between them. And they give Bachelor of Science degrees in things which clearly aren't science, everything from reflexology, chiropractic. Rose Shapiro's new book, Suckers, has a wonderful history of the origins of chiropractic, which I imagine that Simon Singh's forthcoming one will also have something on that. It's one of the balmier things that's become almost respectable in some people's eyes, at least. So, finding this all terribly offensive, I wrote a piece in Nature about science degrees being given in mumbo jumbo, and that created a bit of a stir, as Nature things tend to, because they publicise them well. And one consequence was an invitation to talk on BBC London News, Ms. Lateef, and I was up against Peter Fisher. And Peter Fisher, as you may know, is the head honcho of the Grand Panjandrum of homeopathy in this country, the Queen's homeopathic physician, and the clinical director of the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital, now in some trouble because so many primary care trusts have withdrawn funding from it. He's a medical man, and as homeopaths go, he's relatively honest. In this interview, okay, I didn't remember what all of the slides were in. But we'll come back to Peter Fisher in a moment. You might have thought, if it comes to degrees in nonsense, that the Quality Assurance Agency would have something to say. Their strap line is, we safeguard and help to improve the academic standards and quality of higher education in the UK. Well, improving the standards of education in the UK doesn't, to my mind, include the doctrine that the less you give, the bigger the effect. The maximum effect, you give nothing at all. So I had some correspondence with the head of the QAA, and he points out that, well, it's one of these stupid bureaucratic exercises where a course is judged against the standard which it set for itself, and the standard of the course is to teach that the less you give, the bigger the effect, and you successfully teach that, then you get full marks from the QAA, which is really obviously utter nonsense. And of course, we wouldn't want them to be laying down the content of university courses in general, as he pointed out himself. So there's nothing they can do. In fact, they're entirely ineffective in maintaining quality, even in ordinary courses, in my view, never mind in quackery courses. So they're an intellectual disgrace, I would say, but it's not the fault of the poor guy doing it. His hands are tied by the rules. Now, the fault for the southern universities has to be squarely at the door of the vice-chancellors who run these courses. Now, there are 16 universities who do it. Nature wrote to all of them. The Times Higher Education paper wrote to all of them. I wrote to all of them. I had two replies. The Times Higher Ed had four. Most vice-chancellors simply ignored the letter. The ones that did say something said, but they get ordinary science too, so I reply saying, so that means you have to believe that your students are called upon to believe that response increases with dose on Mondays and Thursdays, but decreases with dose on Wednesdays and Fridays. No reply. It's an answer, isn't it? But it is quite disgrace. These guys are shelling large amounts of public money, and they will not answer perfectly reasonable letters. In fact, Universities UK, the secretary of that, Dan Warwick at the time, clearly believes in quackery herself, I thought, from the brief correspondence we had. And they say nothing about it on their site and also won't answer letters in any sensible way about it. But I only found one statement on their site, which is entirely gullible stuff from Professor Sir Martin Harris, former Vice Chancellor of Manchester University. I don't know who he asked, but what he said is, in my view, nonsense. So then I tried the head of the University of UK, that's what used to be called, the Committee of Vice-Chancellors and Principals, until they had a sort of consignia moment and came to their name to something that nobody could understand, and called themselves the University of the UK. Peter said degree courses are independently assessed for academic rigour and quality. Well, that means, you know, anybody who works at a university couldn't possibly believe that, of course. There's a large amount of paper are shifted, But Mickey Mouse calls his pick Mickey Mouse assessors, and so they all get approved, everything gets approved, however rubbish in all subjects, not just in quackery, actually. But that's the official line, anyway. Well, he's a social scientist, not a historian, but it doesn't take much brain, really, to think that if you give nothing, you can't get an effect. So I tried to explain, this really arose because of something from the Taxpayers' line, Alliance complaining about Mickey Mouse degrees. So I tried to explain the difference between a course in golf course management, which upsets the Taxpayers' Alliance, but doesn't really bother me very much, because a course in golf course management is honest, and says what it says on the label. A course in homeopathy, in my view, is utterly dishonest. But all I got from him was thank you very much for your comments, which I've read with interest. In other words, the great push-off. Not interesting. Okay.
The fact that something's been around and believed by a lot of people is absolutely no guarantee that it's right at some point. Wouldn't life be so simple?
Dr. Fisher, could you ever see it as a science degree in future?
I would hope so. I think I wouldn't deny that a lot of scientific research needs to be done, and I would hope that in the future it would have a scientific basis. I have to say that at the moment that basis isn't comprehensive. To that extent, I would agree with Professor Kuhn.
Ha! I do love that clip. The only time Peter Fitchett ever agreed with me, and he did it on television. And he is sufficiently sensible. The clinical director of the Royal London Homeopathic and the Queen's Homeopathic physician is sufficiently sensible to realise that to give a BSc in homeopathy is inappropriate. Vice chancellors will not answer a letter or respond in any way to that. But this is the ultimate irony, and it shows the sort of depths to which university vice chancellors have sunk, in my view. I've actually got the assessment under the Freedom of Information Act for one such course. It's 49 pages of what Ted Ragg would have called world-class meaningless bollocks. Every buzzword is there that anyone who works in university is only too familiar with, because they ooze out of every document. Multidisciplinary, derivative, delivery, formative and summative assessment, logbooks, schedules, but not a damn word about whether the subject they're teaching is true or false. You know, truth and falsehood are something which don't come into the HR mentality at all. It's just whether you've got the forms there. Here's a direct illustration. I found this on the web. No freedom of information needed. They're evidently proud of it. And unfortunately, this is right on my own doorstep. And it's not part of UCL, I should say. It's part of the NHS. So it can't be laid directly at the door of our... It can't be laid at all at the door of our provost. But it's an application for a job as a spiritual healer. As long as you can tick this box, as far as HR is concerned, you're okay. Relevant professional qualification for specialism, full National Federation of Spiritual Healer certificate with 2 years post-certificate experience. Think that's okay. You know, does it work? Doesn't come into it.
It said all. I said it said all.
Reiki.
Oh, yes.
Reiki.
Yes, yes, yes. That's, yes, another bit. UCL itself has been entirely free of quackery, I thought. I did discover, someone tipped me off actually, that the HR website has, under the pastoral care, a list of alternative therapy sites where people can consult, but it was removed actually by the time I'd seen it. I think someone must have got word that I heard about it. But this came, now I'm just a research assistant, not a professor anymore. I got the 2008 programme for research staff, and one of the things, communication and learning, recent theories and methodologies. Always anybody who uses methodologies when they mean methods is immediately suspect. It includes in the list neuro-linguistic programming and the Sedona method and brain gym. Now this arrived within 2 days of Ben Goldacre's wonderful post about brain gym, in which he described it as barkingly out to lunch. I mean, the exercises themselves are no quite harmless. Mental exercises, you might as well do a brain teaser in the paper, but the neuroscience that goes with them is seriously mad. And this is being taught on this stuff, which is forced upon us actually by the government as part of translational, transferable skills. Every person trying to get on with research has to go to hours of stuff like this, much of which is fairly barkingly mad in my view. I've actually volunteered my services to the staff development and training unit to run free of charge a course on how to spot bullshit. On the grounds that this is the most useful transferable skill one could possibly imagine. I still haven't had an answer, but they're going to let me do it. So, it's all rather like Michael O'Donnell said ages ago, education is out, it's an elitist activity. Cost ineffective, unpopular with grey suits, and now largely replaced by training. Neurolinguistic programming has been around also, it was also pretty balmy. It was classified in a report in Girls 95 alongside Scientology, rebirthing, and primal scream therapy. And, well, I'll skip over Ben's stuff. His article ended, "This ridiculousness comes at very great cost, paid for you by the taxpayer in thousands of state schools. It is peddled to you directly to your children by their credulous and apparently moronic teachers," to which I add, our credulous and moronic HR department. I was in Sarah Bradstreet. Well, I can't be in worse shape with them than I already am already. Okay, so a quick word about two other official things. Now, again, I'm not talking about the practitioners themselves primarily, though, of course, without them, we wouldn't have any of this. But the official organisations that give credibility to them. And there's two come up quite recently. One is the Natural Healthcare Council, which is the thing that the Prince of Wales has been looking for ages, and which the government has decided to give him. And the other is a thing called Skills for Health. There are 28 sector skills councils now that the university department's been renamed Department of Skills and Innovation or some such nonsense. And these are all busy writing down things they call competences. They're just a bit like the EU. They have a vocabulary all of their own, which nobody else can understand. These would be lists of the obvious things you need to do a job, which it seems an enormous waste of time to most people, I imagine, but they take it very diligently. You really don't have to be a scientist to see that both of these are pretty much nonsense. Polly Toynbee is a politician, primarily political columnist, but she could see it. John Sutherland's professor of English literature, he could see it. But apparently our members of parliament can't see it. There's a comment I made at the time, I'm not sure if the letter is ever published actually, but the setting up was initially done by Professor Dame Joan Higgins, and it was soon renamed actually the Complementary Natural Healthcare Council. And its delegation has the creation of this, it's been delegated to the Prince of Wales as though he was a branch of government, which is grotesque. There is no way in which you can sensibly regulate something that's nonsense in the first place. The idea that you must ensure that practitioners are properly qualified is nonsense if the subject itself is nonsense. That means that you're ensuring that all homeopaths have been subjected to 3 years of intensive teaching about miasms and infinite dilutions, and who can benefit from that. In my view, we don't need any new laws. All you need is proper and fair, even-handed application of the present laws. If the Advertising Standards Authority had any teeth, which it hasn't, and can't even touch anything on the web, if the Office of Fair Trading was able to do its job without special loopholes, going to the Office of Fair Trading and report to them homeopathic arnica 30C and said this is mislabeled because it contains no arnica. And damn me, they duly went off to a shop and bought some arnica 30C and sent it to an analyst But about 6 months later, they came back and said, oh, well, there's a loophole in the law anyway, so it doesn't matter that it contains them. If you were selling strawberry jam that contained no strawberries, you'd be in deep trouble. You could sell arnica pills that contain bugger all, and it's perfectly legal. All you need is a sensible application of the present law to get rid of nonsense like that. Likewise, for advertising standards, and there's my picture gone. Likewise, the Skills Council. I found on the Skills Council website a competence, this has become a noun, and for distant healing, three branches, healing in the presence of the client, distant healing in contact with the client, and distant healing not in contact with the client. And I thought distant healing in contact with the client is you have wrong arms or something. But they're solemnly sitting there in offices making lists of the proper qualifications for doing this thing. And I inquired who'd written this. It's actually, I did a Freedom of Information Act, but it's actually public knowledge now. This is all done by the Prince of Wales. And I phoned up the lady at her invitation to find out more. This is a fragment of the conversation.
I'm very baffled by the fact that you say perfectly accurately sum up the result of homeopathy, namely that it doesn't work, and yet you're still setting standards for it. It's just quite baffling to me.
Sector council, it wasn't health, it was agriculture. trees are not us, she said, trees are them. I mean, this is the calibre of people who are running this unbelievably bureaucratic exercise. There's a transcript of the whole of that conversation on the website, but I haven't put a recording on it. I'm sure of the legal standing of that. But it turns out that the only reason they're considering these things is because the Prince of Wales Foundation told them that they wanted homeopathy considered. And that furthermore, they then delegate to the Prince of Wales the writing of them. So this strikes me as desperately unconstitutional. And I'd better stop there because I really want to hear what Andy Lewis has to say. And this is a good introduction to him, because this is the famous Quackometer website, in which he dubbed the wonderful term off-quack for the for the Natural Healthcare Council, and listed several reasons why it's not going to work. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, David.